Sounds True and Shambhala Lion Editions present A Brief History of Everything by Ken Wilber, Session 5, Awakening to the Non-Dual.
So you said that with the archetypes, you're looking into the face of the divine, the first forms of the divine. And yet, modern researchers reject all of that as being, quote, mere metaphysics at best, none of which, they say, can be verified.
Well, you yourself can perform this experiment and look at the data. Then you can help interpret it. If you don't perform the experiment, the meditative injunction, the exemplar, the paradigm, then you don't have the data from which to make a good interpretation. If you take somebody from the magic or mythic worldview, and you try to explain to them that the sum of the squares of the sides of a right triangle is equal to the square of the hypotenuse, you won't get very far. What you're doing can't be seen in those worlds, and yet you're correct. You are performing an experiment in the rational world space, and your mathematical results can be checked by all those who perform the same experiment. It's very public, very reproducible, very fallibilist, very communal knowledge in the rational world space. Its results exist and can be readily checked by all who enter the rational world space and try the experiment. Just so with any of the other interior experiments in awareness, disclosing yet higher realms, of which meditation is one of the oldest, most tested, and most reproduced. So if you're skeptical, that's a healthy attitude, and we invite you to find out for yourself and perform this interior experiment with us and get the data and help us interpret it. But if you won't perform the experiment, please don't ridicule those who do. And by far the most common interpretation of those who have seen the data is you are face to face with the divine.
You mentioned that these subtle or archetypal forms issue directly from emptiness, from the causal, which is the next stage, Fulcrum 9.
When, as a specific type of meditation, you pursue the observing self, the witness, to its very source in pure emptiness, then no objects arise in consciousness at all. This is a discrete identifiable state of awareness, namely unmanifest absorption or cessation, variously known as Nirvikalpa Samadhi, Jnana Samadhi, Ayin, Virgetsan, Nirodh, classical nirvana, the cloud of unknowing. This is the causal state, a discrete state, which is often likened to the state of deep, dreamless sleep, except that this state is not a mere blank, but rather an utter fullness, and it is experienced as such, as infinitely drenched in the fullness of being, so full that no manifestation can even begin to contain it. Because it can never be seen as an object, this pure self is pure emptiness.
Can you get more specific about this?
Well, you are aware of yourself in this moment, yes?
I think so.
So if I say, who are you? You will start to describe yourself. You're a father, a mother, a husband, a wife, a friend. You're a lawyer, a clerk, a teacher, a manager. You have these likes and dislikes. You prefer this type of food. You tend to have these impulses and desires and so on.
Right, I'd list all the things that I know about myself.
All of those things that you know about yourself are objects in your awareness. They're images or ideas or concepts or desires or feelings that parade by in front of your awareness, yes? They're all objects in your awareness.
Mm-hmm.
All those objects in your awareness are precisely not the observing self. All those things that you know about yourself are precisely not the real self. Those are not the seer. Those are simply things that can be seen. All of those objects that you describe when you describe yourself are actually not your real self at all. They are just more objects, whether internal or external. They are not the real seer of those objects. They are not the real self. So when you describe yourself by listing all of those objects, you are ultimately giving a list of mistaken identities, a list of lies, a list of precisely what you ultimately are not. So who is this real seer? Who or what is this observing self? Sri Ramana Maharshi called this witness the I-I, because it is aware of the individual I or self, but cannot itself be seen. So what is this I-I, this causal witness, this pure observing self? This deeply inward self is witnessing the world out there, and it is witnessing all your interior thoughts as well. The seer sees the ego and sees the body and sees the natural world. All of those parade by in front of the seer. But the seer itself cannot be seen. If you see anything, those are just more objects. Those objects are precisely what the seer is not, what the witness is not. So you pursue this inquiry, who am I? Who or what is the seer that cannot itself be seen? You simply push back into your awareness, and you disidentify with any and every object you see or can see. The self, or the seer, or the witness, is not any particular thought. I can see that thought as an object. The seer is not any particular sensation. I am aware of that as an object. The observing self is not the body, it is not the mind, it is not the ego. I can see all of those as objects. What is looking at all those objects? What in you right now is looking at all these objects, looking at nature and its sights, looking at the body and its sensations, looking at the mind and its thoughts? What is looking at all that? Try to feel yourself right now. Get a good sense of being yourself. And notice, that self is just another object in awareness. It isn't even a real subject, a real self. It's just another object in awareness. This little self and its thoughts parade by in front of you just like the clouds float by through the sky. And what is the real you that is witnessing all of that? Witnessing your little objective self? Who or what is that? As you push back into this pure subjectivity, this pure seer, you won't see it as an object. You can't see it as an object because it's not an object. It's nothing you can see. Rather, as you calmly rest in this observing awareness, watching mind and body and nature float by, you might begin to notice that what you're actually feeling is simply a sense of freedom, a sense of release, a sense of not being bound to any of the objects you are calmly witnessing. You don't see anything in particular. You simply rest in this vast freedom. In front of you, the clouds parade by, your thoughts parade by, bodily sensations parade by, and you are none of them. You are the vast expanse of freedom through which all these objects come and go. You're an opening, a clearing, an emptiness, a vast spaciousness in which all these objects come and go. Clouds come and go, sensations come and go, thoughts come and go. And you are none of them. You are that vast sense of freedom, that vast emptiness, that vast opening through which manifestation arises, stays a bit, and goes. So you simply start to notice that the seer in you that is witnessing all these objects is itself just a vast emptiness. It's not a thing, not an object, not anything you can see or grab hold of. It's rather a sense of vast freedom, because it is not itself anything that enters the objective world of time and objects and stress and strain. This pure witness is a pure emptiness in which all these individual subjects and objects arise, stay a bit, and pass. So this pure witness is not anything that can be seen. The attempt to see the witness or know it as an object, that's just more grasping and seeking and clinging in time. The witness isn't out there in the stream. It is the vast expanse of freedom in which the stream arises. So you can't get hold of it and say, aha, I see it. Rather, it is the seer, not anything that can be seen. As you rest in this witnessing, all that you sense is just a vast emptiness, a vast freedom, a vast expanse, a transparent opening or clearing in which all these little subjects and objects arise. Those subjects and objects can definitely be seen, but the witness of them cannot be seen. The witness of them is an utter release from them, an utter freedom not caught in their turmoils, their desires, their fears, their hopes. Of course, we tend to identify ourselves with these little individual subjects and objects, and that's exactly the problem. We identify the seer with puny little things that can be seen, and that's the beginning of bondage and unfreedom. We are actually this vast expanse of freedom, but we identify with unfree and limited objects and subjects, all of which can be seen, all of which suffer, and none of which is what we are. Patanjali gave the classic description of bondage as the identification of the seer with the instruments of seeing, with the little subjects and objects, instead of the opening or clearing or emptiness in which they all arise. So when we rest in this pure witness, we don't see this witness as an object. Anything you can see is not it. Rather, it is the absence of any subjects or objects altogether. It is the release from all of that. Resting in the pure witness, there is this background absence or emptiness, and this is experienced not as an object, but as a vast expanse of freedom and liberation from the constrictions of identifying with these little subjects and objects that enter the stream of time and are ground up in that agonizing torrent. So when you rest in the pure seer, in the pure witness, you're invisible. You cannot be seen. No part of you can be seen, because you are not an object. Your body can be seen, your mind can be seen, nature can be seen, but you are not any of those objects. You are the pure source of awareness, and not anything that arises in that awareness. So you abide as awareness. Things arise in awareness. They stay a bit and depart. They come and they go. They arise in space, they move in time. But the pure witness does not come and go. It does not arise in space, it does not move in time. It is as it is. It is ever-present and unvarying. It's not an object out there, so it never enters the stream of time, of space, of birth, of death. Those are all experiences, all objects. They all come, they all go. But you do not come and go. You do not enter that stream. You are aware of all that, so you are not caught in all that. The witness is aware of space, aware of time, and is therefore itself free of space, free of time. It is timeless and spaceless, the purest emptiness through which time and space parade. So this pure seer is prior to life and death, prior to time and turmoil, prior to space and movement, prior to manifestation, prior even to the Big Bang itself. This doesn't mean that the pure self existed in a time before the Big Bang, but that it exists prior to time, period. It just never enters that stream. It is aware of time, and is thus free of time, and it is utterly timeless. And because it is timeless, it's eternal, which doesn't mean everlasting time, but free of time altogether. It was never born, it will never die, it never enters that temporal stream. This vast freedom is the great unborn, of which the Buddha said, "There is an unborn, an unmade, an uncreate." Were it not for this unborn, unmade, uncreate, there would be no release from the born, the made, the created. Resting in this vast expanse of freedom is resting in this great unborn, this vast emptiness. And because it is unborn, it is undying. It was not created with your body. It will not perish when your body perishes. It's not that it lives on beyond your body's death, but rather that it never enters the stream of time in the first place. It doesn't live on after your body. It lives prior to your body, always. It doesn't go on in time forever. It is simply prior to the stream of time itself. Space, time, objects, all of those merely parade by. But you are the witness, the pure seer that is itself pure emptiness, pure freedom, pure openness, the great emptiness through which the entire parade passes, never touching you, never tempting you, never hurting you, never consoling you. And because there is this vast emptiness, this great unborn, you can indeed gain liberation from the born and the created, from the suffering of space and time and objects, from the mechanism of terror inherent in those fragments, from the veil of tears called samsara.
Yeah, I can get a brief taste of that as you talk about it.
Most people can connect fairly quickly with the witness. Living from that freedom is a gentle exercise, and this is where meditation is very helpful.
What specific recommendations do you have?
Well, various types of meditation often aim for different transpersonal realms. Some aim for psychic experiences, some for the deity mysticism of the subtle realm, some for the formlessness and freedom of the causal witness, and some for non-dual unity, or one taste, which we'll discuss in a moment. My recommendation is simply to start with the acknowledged teachers in any of the great contemplative traditions. One might start by consulting the works of Father Thomas Keating, Rabbi Zalman Schachter Shalomi, the Dalai Lama, Sri Ramana Maharshi, Bawa Muhayyadeen, or any of the many widely acknowledged teachers in any of the great lineages. Later on, we'll talk about the importance of an integral practice that takes the best of these great traditions and integrates them with the best of psychotherapy to arrive at an all-level, all-quadrant transformative practice.
So to conclude with Fulcrum 9 and the witness, how does that witness relate to the causal unmanifest?
The witness is itself the causal unmanifest. It is itself pure emptiness. And if, as a yogic endeavor, you actually keep inquiring intensely into the source, into the pure subjectivity of the seer, then all objects and subjects will simply cease to arise at all. And that would be nirvikalpa, or cessation, an actual yogic state, a discrete state. It is, in fact, the fusion phase of Fulcrum 9. This is pure, formless mysticism. All objects, even God as a perceived form, vanish into cessation, and so deity mysticism gives way to formless mysticism. Because all possible objects have not yet arisen, this is a completely unmanifest state of pure emptiness. What you actually see in the state is infinite nothing, which simply means that it is too full to be contained in any object or any subject or any sight or any sound. It's pure consciousness, pure awareness, prior to any manifestation at all, prior to subjects and objects, prior to phenomena, prior to holons, prior to things, prior to anything. It's utterly timeless, spaceless, objectless. And therefore, it's radically and infinitely free of the limitations and constrictions of space and time and objects, and radically free of the torture inherent in those fragments. It's not necessary to pursue the witness in that particular yogic fashion, but it can be done, and it does point up the unmanifest source of the seer itself. This is why many traditions, like Yogacara Buddhism, simply equate emptiness and consciousness. We needn't get involved in all the technical details and arguments about that, but you get the general point. The witness itself, pure consciousness itself, is not a thing, not a process, not a quality, not an entity. It is ultimately unqualifiable. It is ultimately pure emptiness.
And why do you call this the causal stage?
Because it's the support, or cause, or creative ground of all junior dimensions. Remember that we saw, as Whitehead put it, that the ultimate metaphysical principle is the creative advance into novelty. Creativity is part of the basic ground of the universe. Somehow, some way, miraculously, new holons emerge. I say out of emptiness, but you can call that creative ground whatever you want. Some would call it God, or Goddess, or Tao, or Brahman, or Keter, or Rigpa, or Dhammakaya, or Mat, or Li. The more scientifically oriented tend to prefer to speak simply of the self-transcending capacity of the universe, as Jansch does. That's fine, it doesn't matter. The point is, stuff emerges. Emptiness, creativity, holons. And that's exactly where we started our account. These holons arise as subject and object in both singular and plural forms, that is, the four quadrants. And they follow the tenets, which is simply the pattern that manifestation displays as it arises, a pattern that is a potential of emptiness, a potential of the Dharmakaya, a potential of the Godhead. And with that pattern of tenets, off we go on the evolutionary drive of holons returning to their source. That pattern embodies a creative drive to greater depth, greater consciousness, greater unfolding, and that unfolding ultimately unfolds into its own infinite ground in pure emptiness. But that emptiness is not itself an emergent. It's rather the creative ground, prior to time, that's present all along, but finally becomes transparent to itself in certain holons that awaken to that emptiness, to that spirit, to that groundless ground. That same emptiness as consciousness was present all along as the interior depth of every holon, a depth that increasingly shed its lesser forms until it shed forms altogether. Its depth goes to infinity. Its time goes to eternity. Its interior space is all space. Its agency is the very divine itself, the ground, path, and fruition of emptiness.
So this causal unmanifest, is it the absolute endpoint, as some say? The end of time, the end of evolution, the end of history, the final omega point, as many teachers assert?
Well, many traditions take this state of cessation to be the ultimate state, the final end point of all development and evolution, yes. And this end state is equated with full enlightenment, ultimate release, pure nirvana. But that's not the final story, according to the non-dual traditions. Because at some point, as you inquire into the witness and rest in the witness, the sense of being a witness in here completely vanishes itself. And the witness turns out to be everything that is witnessed. The causal gives way to the non-dual, and formless mysticism gives way to non-dual mysticism. Form is emptiness, and emptiness is form. Technically, you have disidentified with even the witness, and then integrated it with all manifestation. In other words, the second and third phases of Fulcrum 9, which leads to Fulcrum 10, which is not really a separate fulcrum or level, but the reality or suchness of all levels, all states, all conditions. And this is the second and most profound meaning of emptiness. It is not a discrete state, but the reality of all states, the suchness of all states. You have moved from the causal to the non-dual.
So what you're emphasizing is that emptiness really has two meanings.
That's right, and that can be very confusing. On the one hand, as we just saw, it's a discrete, identifiable state of awareness, namely unmanifest absorption or cessation, nirvikalpa samadhi, ayin janana samadhi, nirodha, classical nirvana. This is the causal state, a discrete state. The second meaning is that emptiness is not merely a particular state among other states, but rather the reality or suchness or condition of all states. Not a particular state apart from other states, but the reality or condition of all states, high or low, sacred or profane, ordinary or extraordinary. Spirit, as both the highest level, causal, and the ever-present ground of all levels, non-dual.
So we already discussed the first meaning, emptiness as a discrete state. Now let's discuss the non-dual meaning of emptiness.
Well, the experience of this non-dual suchness is similar to the nature unity experience we earlier discussed, except now this unity is experienced not just with gross form out there, but also with all of the subtle forms in here. In Buddhist terms, this is not just the nirmanakaya, gross or nature mysticism, and not just the sambhogakaya, subtle or deity mysticism, and not just the dharmakaya, causal or formless mysticism. It is the svabhavikakaya, the integration of all three of them. It is beyond nature mysticism, beyond deity mysticism, and beyond formless mysticism. It is the reality or the suchness of each, and thus integrates each in its embrace. It embraces the entire spectrum of consciousness, transcends all, includes all.
Can you give us a direct sense of this non-dual mysticism?
Well, across the board, the sense of being any sort of seer or witness or self vanishes altogether. You don't look at the sky. You are the sky. You can taste the sky. It's not out there. As Zen would say, you can drink the Pacific Ocean in a single gulp. You can swallow the cosmos whole, precisely because awareness is no longer split into a seeing subject in here and a seen object out there. There's just pure seeing. Consciousness and its display are not two. Everything continues to arise moment to moment. The entire cosmos continues to arise moment to moment. But there's nobody watching the display. There is just the display, a spontaneous and luminous gesture of great perfection. The pure emptiness of the witness turns out to be one with every form that is witnessed. And that's one of the basic meanings of non-duality.
Can you give us an even more specific point of reference?
Begin by getting into the state of the witness. That is, you simply rest in pure observing awareness. You are not any object that can be seen, not nature, not body, not thoughts. Just rest in that pure witnessing awareness. And you experience a certain sensation of that witnessing awareness, a sensation of freedom, of release, of great expanse. While you're resting in that state and sensing this witness as a great expanse, look at Mosaic Mountain. Begin to notice that the sensation of the witness and the sensation of the mountain are the same sensation. As you feel your pure self and you feel the mountain, they are absolutely the same feeling. In other words, the real world is not given to you twice, one out there, one in here. That twiceness is exactly the meaning of duality. Rather, the real world is given to you once, immediately. It is one feeling. It has one taste. It is utterly full in that one taste. It's not severed into seer and seen, subject and object, fragment and fragment. It is a singular, of which the plural is unknown. You can taste the mountain. It is the same taste as yourself. It's not out there being reflected in here. That duality is not present in the immediateness of real experience. Real experience, before you slice it up, does not contain that duality. Real experience, reality itself, is non-dual. You are still you, and the mountain is still the mountain, but you and the mountain are two sides of one and the same experience, which is the one and only reality of that moment. As you relax into present experience in this fashion, the separate self sense uncoils. You'll stop standing back from life. You will not have experience. You suddenly become all experience. You are not in here looking out there. In here and out there are one. So you're no longer trapped in here. And so suddenly, you're not in the body-mind. Suddenly, the body-mind has dropped. Suddenly, the wind doesn't blow on you, it blows through you, within you. You're not looking at the mountain, you are the mountain. The mountain is closer to you than your own skin. You are that, and there is no you, just this entire luminous display spontaneously arising moment to moment. The separate self is nowhere to be found. The entire sensation of weight drops altogether, because you are not in the cosmos. The cosmos is in you, and you are purest emptiness. The entire universe is a transparent shimmering of the divine, of primordial purity. But the divine is not someplace else. It is just all of this shimmering. It is self-seen. It has one taste. It is nowhere else.
This concludes Side A.